From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, July 21st, 2009. Every week, Directions Media brings you the most current news and informed opinions on geospatial technology and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Over the past 6 months, we've attended many conferences, and we have some observations on what's hot and what's not, and what perhaps are some of the important technology trends that we heard coming out of these individual conferences. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. Improve the performance of your web maps and make your authoritative data more broadly available with ArcGIS 931. For more information, visit www.esri.com/what's new.
Over the past 6 months, Adeen and I have traveled to many conferences, both domestic and international, including last week's ESRI conference. But we've also been to OGC meetings. We've been to user conferences from Intergraph and Pitney Bowes, the Map World Conference in India. And we've interviewed key geospatial executives. So we're kind of wondering, what do they know and what did they say that would give us some better understanding of what the marketplace is demanding? We've listened to many presentations, some from chief technology executives on important technology trends. And so one question we can pose is, what's hot and what's not? I think that sitting here in the middle of one of the worst economic climates in the last 50 years or so, and yet having come through the dot-com explosion, we can make an argument that maybe this is either the best time to be working in the technology sector or the worst. But let's set aside that rhetorical question for a second and look beyond our noses. I see a few key technology trends that have been mentioned time and again from having attended these events. Not that the people who are saying all of these things understand them completely, but if for no other reason than they have given users like you a chance to think and maybe ponder their impact. Now, we should mention a few things of what we've heard, and I'm going to go through a short list. And Adeen and I will discuss them in a little bit more detail. Number one, from many of the companies that we have talked to, I've heard that they're asking their users, or at least they're telling their users, that we're going to slow down. We hear you. We're not going to rush into the next software revision. We're going to just take it slow. We're going to go on your time. Standards. I've heard a lot of these companies poke the party line out there and say, yeah, we're going to support standards, and that's all I've heard. I don't even know what new standards are coming or what their impact were going to be, but that sense of just throwing that out there seems to have been kind of whitewashed a little bit. I've heard about cloud computing. In practice, the concept is probably as ethereal as its name. The fourth one is open source. To me, the business side is collapsing, and you know, I have to ask the question, why don't some of these proprietary software companies jump into it? I have a couple other thoughts on that. And then the last one is education and possibly careers. We've heard a lot about putting more into your career is important. And in this day and age, when the key prospects out there, the key people who are in the job market looking for jobs, probably the better education that you have, the more education, maybe better. So, Dina, let me just go back to that first topic about hearing from these companies that are telling their users, hey, we're going to slow down. We're going to work with you a little bit. You know, we're not going to rush you into the next version. It's all sort of this, it's like they've heard the user say, hey, don't rush me. I'm probably not going to buy into the next version anyway because maybe my budgets are a little bit slim. And I just want to take it slow. I just want to bring my core group of users up to speed with the last version that you gave us. You feel that that's one of those key things that are coming about?
I think we've seen that at several of the events we've been at. And I think part of the reason that companies are more comfortable doing that is they're all moving their models from a box-to-box kind of sale to a long-term relationship with some kind of a subscription. So it sort of matters less when the release comes out because the revenue stream is much more steady. And I think that works, frankly, both for the vendors and for the users. because the users can budget an annual chunk of change to set aside, and there's no big surprise when 1 year there's a huge number and the next year it's a smaller number. So I think that's all tying into the economics as well.
And also, the cycle of revisions has slowed down dramatically. Some going to a yearly revision, maybe some who are doing interim releases, but you don't see that every 6 months we're going to go gold on another release. And it's just kind of all slowed down.
I think everybody has slowed down. The one company that still feels like they're going full bore at it, to me, is Autodesk. They seem to be going through versions of AutoCAD and all the add-ons, including AutoCAD Map, very quickly. I'm having a hard time in the educational sector just keeping up. They're still at that kind of cycle. But everybody else does seem to be much calmer. And while we certainly heard an awful lot this week about when will ArcGIS 9.4 be out, there were still plenty of people who were still exploring what was in 9.3.1.
And just back to Autodesk for a second, certainly they're a much more product-focused company than some of the others. ESRI, of course, has a lot of products, but they seem to be rolling everything into ArcGIS and at least putting that under a kind of a global umbrella.
Right, and really redefining their relationship with their users. Autodesk is also redefining it, but I think it's either the uptake is different or the user base is different, but it certainly seems to require them to keep at it. And of course, we have the public-private company thing difference as well.
Let me move on to standards. We're all familiar over the last several years about the Open Geospatial Consortium standards, how they're trying to essentially get everybody on the same page. But I feel like the conversation has died down a little bit. I don't hear as much from the OGC as maybe we once heard. They, of course, continually put out press releases on new things that they're working on, but I don't hear that reflected by the solution providers. I hear the party line, we're going to support the OGC standards, and yet I don't think that there's been either communication from the vendors or from the OGC themselves about what's going on. I know, because we speak to them, that they're working on things with other industries to match standards coming out from other technology sectors. But there's nothing more than spouting the party line, and I feel that users probably don't know if it's relevant anymore.
I have to sort of raise my hand first and say I have sort of a past relationship with the OGC where part of my job was communication about standards. So I sort of had an insider's look at that. One of the things that I point out quite a bit when I talk about standards is when standards work, they're invisible. So making a big deal about something being able to access some other piece of software's internal functionality or being able to read in a standard format like KML, it's not a big deal. And when it is at its best, it is, in fact, invisible. So it can become very difficult to sort of highlight it. But I do have to agree that it is very rare that you see, say, on a main stage presentation at a geospatial conference, somebody highlighting the fact that standards are enabling something.
Yeah, and I think it was a much bigger deal when things were getting going with the OGC 5 and 10 years ago. And I think that's a really good point, that maybe, as you say, there's not a big deal to support these anymore, at least to promote them and to make a huge deal out of it. And yet I know that the OGC is working with other standards bodies. Perhaps that will come into more of our discussions as they roll them out and roll out what they've been doing.
Well, I think that sort of parallels what's going on in GIS. I mean, a lot of the vendors are spending an awful lot of energy on core technology, but they're also spending an awful lot of energy reaching out to related technologies, be it database vendors or mobile developers, or I went to a session at the ESRI user conference about a particular profile for energy metadata. You know, so it's really paralleling what's going on in the industry.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. I want to touch on cloud computing, because everybody who I have sat in on in a presentation, and this is at the CEO level, I heard it from Jack Dangerman, I heard it from Halsey Wise, I've heard it from Mike Hickey at Pitney Bowes. Everybody is saying, we've got to move to the cloud, we've got to move to the cloud. I just get this feeling like, what's the cloud? Even we're going to host two different sessions at Location Intelligence this year on cloud computing, and I think that it's been so ill-defined that we don't quite know what it's there. Is it software as a service? Is it web services? Is it virtualization, in which you're deploying one application replicated across many different users? Is it check-in and check-out of a certain license? I think there are so many things out there that, users have to think of, and in particular IT managers, that moving to the cloud is very ethereal at this point, and yet we see some great impact, some great benefit of that. This is going to be a great cost saver. It's going to expose more users to a variety of applications, or it's going to reduce the cost of ownership. So a lot of these things coming into play, we don't quite know how to grasp them. Again, it's as soft and ethereal as the name implies.
Right, and it's one of those things you have to talk about. It. You can't not talk about it if you're in technology. And I think a lot of vendors are feeling sort of forced to make some big statements about it. And I did go to the session at the ESRI User Conference on cloud computing, and part of me was disappointed because I wanted a firmer statement. But in retrospect, I thought they were being very thoughtful about where they are now and not leaping ahead and making all sorts of promises. This harkens back to me, and I think this is an apt analogy. All this is another computing platform. And just like every other change in computing platform, we have to figure it out, whether it was from the mainframe to the desktop, whether it was from a laptop that's on the move to a phone that's on the move. You always have to go back and ask those basic questions about what do you deliver on this new platform, how do you deliver it, does it save money, what is the hardware and software. I mean, we're going back very much to those, you know, those five parts of a GIS and sort of trying to apply them to this somewhat ethereal thing called the cloud.
To drill down a little bit deeper, from what I've heard is that we want to be able to pick and choose the services that are available, again, on an internet platform that we believe will be better serviced by other providers, not done internally. If we want to check out a piece of demographic data, for example, or we want to use a particular model within a geospatial platform, somebody that's developed that's compatible with ArcGIS Modeler or some other modeling program, that we could be able to go and get that, be charged a nominal fee, be able to use it. And we're able to go and pick and choose the services that have been designed and developed by specialists, and I'm going to pick and choose the ones that I want. That's kind of the promise that's out there.
And that promise, to be fair, that promise has been out there for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since the internet sort of pushed its head onto the scene, that was a picture, and I certainly recall Jack Dangerman describing that 9 or 10 years ago.
Yeah,
but we're still figuring it out, clearly.
Yeah, right, and it takes a while for things to catch on, but it also takes time for business models to be developed and people to expose a certain expertise. So, yeah, I don't think we're there, but it seems like we're getting closer, and I think it's maybe being driven by other companies to which the geospatial industry is addressing, like Citrix and like Amazon, who are offering services, and everybody's trying to figure out how they move their services to somebody who's out there with a little bit louder voice like a Citrix. Open source. This is an issue that I think, okay, everybody knows what open source technology is. Everybody thinks it's free, but yeah, you got to support it. What I want to focus is on the business side, and I wonder if the business side is collapsing a little bit. And I wonder why the so-called proprietary vendors haven't picked up on the support. And we can go back to Autodesk and talk about how they sort of championed the use of open source and supported a piece of software that they let go into the open source community. But we haven't heard a lot about it recently. And I'm just wondering why the proprietary companies haven't picked up on it and said, you know what, we're going to support it. We're going to be a service provider for any open source technology that you use. And I liken that to kind of an analogy where the train companies, a long time ago in the 1800s, kind of looked at that thing that Henry Ford did and said, you know, I don't think that car thing is really doing very well. Or they looked at the thing that the Wright brothers did and said, you know, that airplane thing, that thing is going to go away. Well, here's a perfect opportunity for a proprietary company to say, you know what, we're going to offer a service to do all your open source geospatial technology for you. And that's a new business model. I don't see that coming, but I'm wondering why somebody hasn't jumped onto it. And the whole thing about open source seems to have died down a little bit. Do you get that sense?
Well, I'm going to go back to my invisible theory that I had with standards. Open source works. People are using it. It's my contention that people are making money supporting it. But when you get right down to it, it's just GIS. And I've had this conversation with several people in the open source and non-open source communities. You know, should we have some special track at our conference about open source? Well, no, it's just software, right? So I think it's blending, and I think that's actually very healthy, where maybe for some people it matters much less. Now, to go back to your question about why aren't, quote, proprietary companies, unquote, going after the support aspect, well, you certainly have to get the expertise, which you could buy. It's out there. But I'm not sure that that's the way they want to go. I mean, it's always tricky if you have free products that you then support and you don't have a vested interest in their long-term existence. Now, having said all that, OpenGeo, which is a renamed version of the Open Planning Project, they're starting to really sort of offer a stack of open source geospatial tools that they then support. I mean, they're really going after that model across a whole bunch of platforms. And I'm going to be very curious to see how that works, because they've really been one of the first to step up and sort of try to build the whole picture with that full support model.
I think that's a big question that's out there. Probably some of these software companies are scrambling just enough to keep their own products supported, so I can certainly see that aspect. Let me move to the final issue, which is education and career. Kind of the both are blended and melded, only because people out there who are either in jobs want to know whether they should go get more training. People who are looking for jobs certainly want to know what the situation is out there. And let's talk about three specific areas for which there is a need to support geospatial technology. One is the trained GIS person may be coming out with a certificate in GIS. The other is a discipline-specific individual who may be a trained forester or a trained urban planner who perhaps knows the tools of geospatial technology. And the third line is an IT professional who may be a database administrator but is not really trained in geospatial technology. All three are needed, and yet if I'm applying for a job, say at a local government, that GIS manager probably only gets to choose one. And there's perhaps advice to be taken there from maybe folks like us as to what perhaps is needed in the industry today. Is it somebody who's an IT specialist, somebody who's a discipline specialist, or someone who is just a trained person in GIS and comes out with that GIS certificate? I get the feeling that GIS certificate, somebody who's trained in the software, who may be a lower entry-level person, is perhaps the most needed individual at this point. I get the feeling that especially in government, they may be looking for entry-level positions, and that's going to be the one that, you know, gets the most attention. Do you see that playing out? You're doing training right now for individuals. What do you think is the most valuable person in the marketplace right now?
I think you're probably right that the demand right now is for people who can literally drop into a seat of some GIS and start producing, whether it's maps, whether it's data that's going to be part of an online implementation. They need to have them sort of ready to go. So there's a pretty core set of skills to do that, and I think that's exactly what these certificates are aimed at pulling together in a couple of years. What I think is happening, if you imagine that old pyramid that we used to talk about, I mean, I always attribute it to Intergraph because it was there that I first heard about it, where you've got the doers, users, and viewers, right?
Yeah.
Where the viewers are on the bottom, and there's a whole bunch of those, and the users are in the middle, and there's sort of fewer of those, and then the doers are at the very top, and there's even fewer of those, right?
Right.
What I think is happening is that pyramid is going on a real big diet so that the waistline, the middle of it, is really getting much, much smaller. So we're getting an awful lot more people doing an awful lot more in the viewing department, because the apps are getting better and they're being delivered online and on phones and so forth. And I think the people at the tippity top that are the doers that are making the data that now I think are doing more than that. They're managing the back-end systems. They're managing the database. They're going to be the ones that implement the cloud, should it be implemented. So I think it's on those two ends where the demand is going to rise. Now, when you throw in this extra dimension of specialization, that, I think, is actually becoming less and less important because I think our educational process is becoming more and more horizontal, such that if you've got a nice base liberal education, you can learn the basics of forestry, or you can learn the basics of electric networks, or you can learn the basics of urban planning. My sense is those two technology-focused ones, as long as you've got a good liberal base, and frankly, you know how to learn, you're going to be just fine.
Well, and even looking back on my education many years ago, you know, I had eventually come to learn the tool, and then what happened is that I kind of flipped my own specialty, which was I became a really, really good user of the technology, and my discipline specialty kind of became less important. So I kind of echo your sentiment.
And that's my gut feeling right now, and we'll have to keep watching the demand charts from the Department of Labor and also looking at what are happening to graduates of the various programs that are out there.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Our sponsor, ESRI, would like to remind you that you can keep your GIS skills up to date, even on a limited travel budget, by taking part in ESRI's on-site training, coaching, video conferencing, or online self-study classes. These training options provide the training you need to be successful with ESRI software when and where you need it. To register for courses or learn more about ESRI training, visit www.esri.com/take training. Thanks again for joining us today on another Directions Media podcast. If you would like to comment on today's podcast, you can certainly write to us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave us a comment on the Directions Magazine website or at All Points blog. Again, thanks for joining us today. And be sure to tell a friend.